Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Wednesday, June 22nd, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's read the book, 9/11 on Trial, knows that it opens with an acknowledgement section where I give credit to some of the best researchers in the world. Well, the first name listed in this acknowledgement section is Eric Hufschmitz.
That's right.
And that's who we have on our show today. When I was compiling data for this book, 9/11 on Trial, one of the most invaluable resources there was is this book right here.
Not painful, to mention impressive.
Right. Painful Questions. Not only is the information in it astounding, but the color photography is just beyond imagination. This book here, I was saying a little bit before the show that there's probably only five or six books you really need about 9/11, and this is certainly right up there at the top of the list. Also, Eric Hufschmitz was nice enough to give us some free copies of his DVD, Painful Deceptions, and anyone that orders the Wing TV 9/11 collection, they get a free copy of Eric Hufschmitz's book. So without further ado, we'd like to welcome one of the best 9/11 researchers there is, Mr. Eric Hufschmitz. How are you doing, Eric?
Hey, Eric.
Oh, I'm doing all right. Nice to talk to you guys again.
Yeah, we've had you on the show quite a number of times. It's always fascinating. And I know you just returned from a 9/11 mm-hmm. European tour that was sponsored by Jimmy Walter.
So we're not even hearing much about it at all.
Yeah, that's one of the shames. But before we jump into this, tell everyone how they can find your website and how they can find your book and video.
Well, the easiest website to remember is hugequestions.com.
Okay.
Just like the words are, H-U-G-E, and then questions.
Okay.
And there's some free videos they can watch, as well as get information about the book and some articles that I put together.
Yeah, and I'd like everyone to know that there's material there other than 9/11, which is also very fascinating. So, as we said, Eric, you just returned from this 9/11 European tour, and I know that the controlled press did a media blackout on the first three mm-hmm. cities on this tour. So, from what you saw over there in Europe, did you perceive any differences between the European mainstream media and that of the American press?
No, they're as bad as ours. And if anything, BBC even tried to do a little, I guess you call it a psyop on us. They as we were going into London, they said, oh, BBC is going to interview you guys. This is going to be great. Get ready for this big interview. And I'm thinking, yeah, right, they're just going to do like an attack piece. But then a few days before, they're saying, BBC is, they're getting worried. They may cancel because Christopher Bolin works for the American Free Press, and that magazine has a person who might be anti-Semitic, and now they're a little worried about the possible anti-Semitism. And, I mean, this is stupid.
Yeah.
It's like they're just trying to cause fights. And it's worse than CBS and NBC. You know, they just totally ignore us. Here we got BBC trying to start, I guess, fights with us
yeah.
or something. I don't know what's
yeah.
going on.
We're
going
to touch upon that a little bit later.
Wow. Volunteer Rachel Hughes, a volunteer at Ground Zero, has developed
Start off with question one. That's later.
Oh, never mind.
Hang on a second, Eric. We got our questions out of order.
Oh, wow, I have all my questions. Can we start over?
No, go ahead, right there.
Okay. In 2004, Eric, Jimmy Walter spent $3.5 million in advertising in the United States to draw attention to 9/11. So what are your thoughts on the effectiveness of this advertising campaign, and how do you think Jimmy felt about it?
Well, personally, I think he probably felt the same as me. It was shocking. You can understand why the mainstream media will ignore this, but the 9/11 groups were ignoring it. I mean, this almost like gives them all away as something's wrong here. You know, September11th.org and the Guerrilla News Network and
mm-hmm.
all of these groups are just pretending they don't see this. I mean, he spent more money advertising my book than most authors ever make in their lifetime, and they're turning their heads.
I know.
I think what he did is he not just helped get this information out. He's helping people to realize, you know, that most of the 9/11 movement is a phony. They're not really trying to get information out. They're trying to control it. Like, Guerrilla News Network came out with Aftermath right after the attack, and all that does is try to push you over to the ISI, the Pakistani's ISI. You know, got Paul Thompson with his timeline, again, pushing the ISI. So I think what Jimmy Walters actually did, he not just got some information out, but he's helping people to realize this 9/11 movement is totally dominated.
Yeah. Oh, and we touch upon that quite a bit. And I think Lisa has a question about that later. But I want to run a quote by you from Jimmy Walter. And he says that if any part of the 9/11 story was not done by 19 Arabs who flunked out of flight school, then the whole story is a sham. Yet last week on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, they had a 9/11 roundtable where they spent 2 hours, two of the 3 hours of that show, talking about the 19 Arab hijackers, this whole fallacy. So, Eric, it's almost been 4 years since 9/11. Why are so many people still falling into this 19 Arab terrorist trap?
Well, we're still getting this from a lot of people. See, the deception is so extreme. Like Sybil Edmonds, she's under some gag order. Who knows what she cannot say, but what she can say is deceptive. What she can say is the Arabs were involved.
Yeah.
So they're using her to help promote this nonsense. Like, oh, here's a whistleblower. She's talking about the Arabs. I mean, this is deception, what they're doing with her.
Right, and that's what we heard basically on the George Norrie 9/11 roundtable the other night,
yeah.
too.
And we've said that before, that Sybil Edmonds supports the government story by what she's saying.
And it may be that she has other information she's not allowed to talk about that would really open it up, but all they're going to let her talk about is the stuff that supports the government. That's why they give her publicity.
Yep. Yeah.
And the people that were on George Norrie's show, the Michael Levine and that other guy, I mean, they're just, they're giving themselves away. I mean, this is, you almost have to say, stop fooling around. I mean, we can start putting a list together of who's in it.
Right.
Who's covering up. This is getting so obvious now. And there's that Mark Levine. I don't know if he's related. He's the one who's got an interview of Sybil Edmonds on the Internet. I mean, after a while, you can start picking up, getting a whole list of these people.
That's
yes.
right.
There's more and more information coming out now, Eric, about controlled demolition at the World Trade Center. The latest coming from Morgan Reynolds, a former Bush team member. And yet, there's still 9/11 groups led by people like David Kubiak, Nicholas Levis, Kyle Hentz, that are all really wishy-washy about controlled demolition. Do you think a lot of these 9/11 groups are doing their utmost to keep controlled demolition from coming to the forefront?
While at the same time pushing the whole LIHOP.
The whole LIHOP thing?
Yes, I think that's what it all is. They've been on it right from the beginning, trying to distract everybody into, they don't want the demolitions to come out. And I can see part of the reason, our tour shows part of the reason. I wasn't even fully aware of it, but part of the reason I think they're so afraid of this demolition coming out is there are so many victims of that dust. You know, people refer to it as dust. What it really was is like toxic, pulverized buildings. There was mercury from the fluorescent bulbs. There's pulverized computers. There's pulverized glass. People were breathing it. I mean, the victims, people think, oh, there's only 3,000 deaths. You should see how many people are suffering from health problems from this, from the dust.
Yeah,
that attack was devastating.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great point. I know Lisa has a question about that, but we're going to get back to this whole controlled demolition and William Rodriguez, who was on the tour with you. But first, we know that there was some trouble on this European tour. Specifically, it came from a woman named Jenna Orkin, who was scheduled to speak about peak oil, which should have thrown up a red flag to everyone right off the bat. But she started trouble with Christopher Bolin, saying that he was an anti-Semite because he writes for the American Free Press, and that's run by Willis Cardo. Now, Willis Cardo also writes for the Barnes Review, and in that magazine they said that 6 million Jews may not have been killed in the Holocaust. So tell us more about what happened, and it just seems like they were just grasping at straws to try to start some trouble.
Yeah, she did it a little bit sneakier than that. She started, before the tour started, she was going to be one of the speakers about the dust. That was what Jimmy Walter wanted her to talk about, the dust. Like, because she did speak about the dust at the New York City meeting that he held on September 11th. So, but about a week or two before the meetings were supposed to start, before we were supposed to fly over to Europe, she started sending this email out about how maybe Bolin might be, she's real careful how she words it because she doesn't want to get sued. Maybe he might be anti-Semitic because he works for a company where there's somebody who might be anti-Semitic. And then she says she doesn't really want to talk about 9/11 anyway. She'd rather talk about peak oil.
Oh, boy.
And eventually they just said, get her off this tour. This is stupid.
Right.
But while she's not on the tour, she's still apparently sending email over to the people in Europe. While we're trying to talk about it, she's apparently sending email to the people in Vienna and who knows where else saying, oh, that Bolin, he might be anti-Semitic. He might be. She's real careful.
Uh-huh.
And so she got the people in Vienna so worried, they started pressuring Jimmy, oh, don't let him speak. He might get arrested because we have laws over here. Over in Europe, I don't know if you're aware of this, those people are so beaten down. They have almost no willpower left. In Vienna, Germany, England, there's several, like six different nations over there. You're not even allowed to talk about the Holocaust or Anne Frank's diary. You'll get arrested.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like Bush passing a law that says you cannot talk about Oklahoma City or 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination. I mean, this is unbelievable.
You know,
anyway, they got the people in Vienna so frightened, they started pressuring Jimmy. Don't let him speak. Don't let him speak. You might get arrested.
Yeah.
I mean, this is so stupid, and yet it scares people over there.
Right. We know Jenna Orkin had contacts with the CIA from her days in Saudi Arabia. Plus, in a Counterpunch article, which throws up another red flag, she wrote about calling a former CIA agent. Lastly, when she was recently asked if she works for the ADL, she refused to answer that question. So who do you think she's tied to, Eric?
Oh, I'm sure it's going to happen. Somehow you'll find it ADL, Zionism, Mossad. I don't know what group you want to call it, but it's that same group. I mean, they're all over the World Trade Center. And if you look at the World Trade Center attack and the Pentagon attack, I think they're very different. And I think this is why what you got going on here is fighting between these two groups. The Pentagon attack is more like what you saw in the Northwoods document,
mm-hmm.
where it's kind of superficial. You know, there aren't really that many deaths. And a lot of the deaths that occurred with the Pentagon attack may not even be real. They may be like the Northwoods document where people are faking their deaths. You know, on Flight 77, a lot of those people were like Raytheon people or military. They may not even be real deaths. They may have just taken some money and said, oh, you can have my name. I'll just start a new life.
Yeah, we actually ran an article about that. Now, I want to read a quote to you from Christopher Bolin. It's in the June 13th edition of the American Free Press. And he says, and he's writing about Jenna Orkin. He says, this blatant attempt at censorship by Orkin revealed to Walter and others how the 9/11, and he says this in quotations, truth movement, is infiltrated and often controlled by individuals and agents dedicated to suppressing certain aspects of the criminal attacks. So my question to you is, do you feel that the practice of censorship is a good litmus test for people to be wary of an individual?
Right.
Oh, exactly. In fact, you can see the difference between Jimmy Walter. I mean, Jimmy just said, come on over here. I'm paying for your trip. I'm paying for your time. And speak. He didn't tell us what to speak about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just 9/11. He didn't tell us. See, he's the one, he actually practices freedom of speech. He may not agree with everything everyone says, but his attitude is like, get it out, get the information out, get people to talk. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't have to all agree with each other all the time. Well, I don't even agree with myself every 3 years. I might change my mind on something.
You ought to see us.
Yeah, really.
What I mean, this is what freedom of speech is, and he actually practices it. He just said, come on over here. I said, what do you want to talk about? You know, it's basically 9/11.
Yeah.
And we say what we want to say. This is what it should be. And you look at most 9/11 groups, they're trying to tell you what to say. They're trying to tell you what happened. They're doing this all the time to try to tell you, well, there was no uranium at the Pentagon, or no uranium used at the World Trade Center, or the Arabs really were flying it. They're constantly telling you this, or they'll tell you that the doctors were not involved in the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
You have to listen to that sometimes.
Eric, let me ask you this. What was Christopher Bolin's reaction when he was barred from the Vienna engagement?
Well, he was a little annoyed, of course, but at the same time, you have to, it's like they're giving you a present because here they are exposing themselves again.
Right.
You know, it's stupid. The whole thing is so stupid, but you have to ask yourself why, and then it starts opening up. Who's this Jenna Orkin?
Uh-huh.
And what is her connection with this? And what else is going on in Vienna? Who are these other people that she's talking to? I mean, it starts opening up this whole issue.
They start showing their hands.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they're just exposing themselves. It's like with a Penn and Teller show. I don't know if you did you see that Penn and Teller show where they tried to make fun of me and Jimmy Walter?
Yeah, at the end of the show, I want to ask you about that. But before we get to that, another individual on this tour was a man named William Rodriguez, who's one of only five people who had the master keys to the World Trade Center Tower. Now, on the morning of 9/11, he reported hearing explosions from the basement level of the towers. Then he said he heard a whole other series of explosions.
Mm-hmm.
Then finally, during his rescue efforts, he said that he heard heavy equipment being moved on the 34th floor, which was completely bare.
It was very interesting to meet him, and of course he didn't quite he didn't seem to understand the whole thing was blown up either. He didn't quite get that until he met us. So
uh-huh.
this could lead this is another case where you can see why they don't want people talking, because then people start putting their pieces together. He was in the basement of the towers, and he heard an explosion below him. There's six basements down there. He was like the level number one. Below him, he said he heard an explosion, and some guy came rushing out with his skin ripped off his arms. And then he said, a fraction of a second or whatever after that explosion, he heard the plane hit above at the top of the towers. Mm-hmm. And then he said he heard a third one a little bit later than that, and the third one was somewhere else. I mean, he testified for the 9/11 Commission, but nothing he said is in there. You can't even find his name in there.
Yeah.
Because nothing he says is what the government wants you to hear about. That explosion below, what was that? It was before the plane hit. It was as if they saw this plane coming and they decided, okay, the plane's going to hit. Let's get these explosives going in the basement, at the same time to cover it, to mask the noise.
Well, very briefly, talk about this 34th floor and how it was completely bare.
Okay, well, he was saying after these explosions occurred, he starts trying to rescue people. And so he's got the key that opens up the door to the stairwells. So he starts going up the stairwells and opening unlocking the door mm-hmm. so people can get out. And he says the 34th floor, he already knew about the 34th floor being empty. And he says when a tenant moves out of these buildings, they would just completely clean it. The flooring is gone, the walls are gone. So if you were to go onto the 34th floor, he says, you would just see the columns and the elevators. It would just be barren. And so there was nobody in there. And he says the elevator would not even stop on that floor because it was an empty floor. There's nothing there. It's just a construction zone area. So he's climbing up the stairs. He's on the 33rd floor, and he hears this heavy equipment moving up on the floor above him, which was the 34th floor, the empty floor. And he was too scared. He got scared. It's like, there's nobody in there. The doors are locked. The elevator doesn't stop there. And he hears equipment moving around. Mm-hmm. So he was even too scared to open that floor, and he went above it. He just skipped
it.
That's
very interesting.
And he never did figure out what was up there. What are they doing?
In case people don't know, the 9/11 Commission interviewed Mr. Rodriguez in a closed-door session at the FEMA offices in New York, and none of his testimony was included in their final whitewash report.
Which is what he says doesn't fit their official story, the explosions in the basement.
Yeah, they were pretty upset with what he had to say, I hear, huh?
Yeah, they did not want to hear that. He said they did not like it. And they did not, and who knows what else, the equipment on the 34th floor, then he heard explosions, little explosions, too, as he's rescuing people, even.
Yeah. Now, as we said, William Rodriguez was one of five people only that had keys to the World Trade Center complex, and also in this book here, 9/11 Exposed, we interviewed a gentleman named Scott Forbes, who worked for Fiduciary Trust, and he talked about a power down at the World Trade Center complexes the weekend before 9/11. Do we have any idea yet, Eric, how these explosives were planted or who planted? Do we know any of these final details?
No, not yet. In fact, even Rodriguez, when we were asking him if he knows or saw anything, from his point of view, people are always coming in and out of these buildings.
Right.
And so it could be very easy to slip in and out. There's so many people. There's tens of thousands of them working there. And so you can't ask every single person to, what are you doing here? There's always work going on. There's always people coming in and out. There's always tourism. There's deliveries going in and out constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be very easy to slip them in and out. And so no one has yet figured that part of it out yet.
Okay, now I'm going to start where I started wrong at the beginning. Rachel Hughes was a woman who volunteered at Ground Zero, and she has subsequently developed a chronic health condition in which now she only has 20 to 30% of her former lung capacity. Could you describe for people some of the serious detrimental health issues that have arisen and been made manifest since 9/11 with the rescue workers?
Yes, she, in her case, you can sense it just by being around her. She has trouble just walking distances and faint voice. She was breathing a lot of this dust, and what people don't realize is dust is not really the right word for this stuff. It's a blown-up building. It's blown-up. There's fluorescent light bulbs and mercury. There's computers with all the heavy metals and the lead and just broken glass. While we were over there, just in the hotel in Madrid, we just happened to run across an American tourist who was covered with the dust on that day, and he said it stung a little, but it didn't really hurt, so he tried to wash it off, and he says it was like like glass. Uh-huh. And then it occurred to me, you know, all those glass windows, all those computer monitors were pulverized. People were breathing these sharp pieces of glass. They were getting it on their skin, their eyes, their ears.
Right. And the smaller the particles are, the deeper they go into the recesses of your lungs.
Right. And they were inhaling it and swallowing this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't just dust. It was blown up buildings and blown up computers. And so there's a lot of people suffering health problems. That cloud was all over lower Manhattan, blew into Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And so there's maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people who experienced health problems from this. Some of it may be just temporary, but some may be permanent damage. Mm-hmm. Like in the case of Rachel, she's got to every once in a while get oxygen.
Jeez. And the city of New York has basically just washed its hands of that whole issue?
Yeah, they're trying to pretend that the air is safe to breathe, that there's nothing to worry about. The victims are being denied any sort of help. Like Rachel, you know, she's being denied any assistance even, so she's going to have to pay for her own health problem.
Yeah. Well, Eric, to wind the show down, let's look at the Israeli angle here. And this is so much of an overlooked aspect of it, but I know that there's a plethora of information pointing to this Israeli connection. And it's even been written about by Italian journalist Maurizio Blondé and also New Jersey's Bergen Record journalist Paolo Lima. And tell us about the Urban Movement Company, how the Mossad was posing as art students, and how the owner of this company, a guy named Dominique Suter, was allowed to flee the country before the FBI ever had a chance to talk to him.
Oh, well, actually, you know, what's interesting is William Rodriguez has more to add to this. He says that remember those five dancing Israelis that were they caught?
Uh-huh.
Filming? He says after they were caught, in their, they had some Arab clothing that
right.
they had
yeah.
in their trunk or in the car, and apparently they had dressed up as Arabs.
Yeah.
And then they tested, the van's testing positive for explosives. I mean, it's even beyond just, it wasn't just dancing Israelis. They were dancing Israelis dressed as Arabs.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, it's unbelievable how obvious this gets.
We know there's a gag order placed on the New York Fire Department, on FAA officials, even the sergeant that arrested those Israelis at Liberty State Park in New Jersey. Is anyone coming forward, like from the fire department or the FAA, any new information?
Just to break their silence?
No, actually, Rodriguez had some of it. He some of the people in New York may know about it, but nobody is publicly talking. You know, it's just the thing that they only whisper it quietly, and it doesn't get very far because, like you said, somebody clamped down tight on these people.
Oh, that's
I know
sure.
that the one of the firemen that we saw doing the boom, 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 boom in the video, Louis Caccioli, is now refusing to talk to anybody where he was before.
Yeah, I think they're either getting afraid or somebody has come to them and there's some reason they're not talking. I guess it's partly fear and partly threats. I don't know what it is, but the evidence is just kind of overwhelming that there's a lot of Israeli operation here going on here.
Yeah. Well, Eric, it's fascinating every time you're on the show. The book is Painful Questions. Mm-hmm. Tell everybody one more time how they can find your website.
It's hugequestions.com,
okay.
And it's huge, just like H-U-G-E, and then questions.
Very good. And before we go today, you have to tell us about Penn & Teller.
Oh, that they tried to make... that show was trying to defend the Oswald killed Kennedy, the astronauts landed on the moon, and 9/11. So they picked those particular three.
Uh-huh.
And so Christopher Bolin and I are talking about it, and he starts looking into, well, who's Penn & Teller? Who's running this? And he finds his name, you know, eventually you get to this David Wolper,
uh-huh.
who's a big shot in the TV industry.
Right.
And so it could very well be that this is going to lead you to some of the people involved in those particular three scams. David Wolper and his friends may have been involved in the Kennedy assassination, because if you read Piper's book,
right.
there's a lot of Mossad involved in that. Here's David Wolper, who's essentially another Zionist, and he may have been involved in the filming of the Apollo moon landing. The astronauts are friends with him. Neil Armstrong went to his private golf course to play golf with this guy. Neil Armstrong won't talk to hardly anybody, yet he'll go and play golf with this guy?
Oh, man.
I mean, think about this. The astronauts probably feel safe with this guy because he won't let their secret. secret out, and he won't ever ask him, hey, what was it like on the moon, Armstrong?
Did you see any stars?
Right, yeah. Well, Eric,
right, and you see, and then 9/11, it may be that his friends were involved in that also. And so, it's again, it's like Jenna Orkin, by attacking us, they're leaving clues as to who they are, because all you have to ask is, why are they attacking us? Why would he care? Why would those people care?
Yeah.
It's hard to cover up a crime without leaving a few more hints about who you are when you do it, you see?
Right.
That's right. Well, Eric, we think the world of you. You're
yes,
always
we do.
Fascinating, and just thank you for taking some time to come on Wing TV today.
Uh-huh.
Tomorrow we'll be back again with another show. We're going to talk about a little bit more about that coast-to-coast 9/11 roundtable. So keep your eyes open, folks. There's a lot going on.
See you.